Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC. I'm producer Cameron Costa, and on today's episode, Steven Mnuchin, from Treasury Secretary under President Trump to TikTok.
I'm going to put together a group to buy TikTok.
You're trying to buy TikTok.
I am, because this should be owned by U.S. businesses.
And Nelson Peltz's push to restore the magic to Disney. The proxy fight underway at the House of Mouse, and how Disney is fighting back with 13D Monitor founder Kenneth Squire.
Bob Iger's obviously pulling all the stops to win this proxy fight.
Plus, the latest on Boeing's manufacturing issues and Xing Elon Musk's interview on X. Former CNN anchor Don Lemon recording a show that will no longer premiere.
It's an interview you're conducting, but it's also an interview for the job with the guy who's hiring you, sort of, too.
It's Thursday, March 14th, 2024, and Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We're live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Meantime, let's talk about the head of the National Transportation Safety Board, because they said yesterday that security camera footage showing work being done on a Boeing MAX 9 door plug that later blew out mid-flight has been overwritten. In a letter to the Senate Committee, NTSB Chair Jennifer Hamady and her agency still lack critical information, they're saying, about the chain of events that led up to that January incident, including who performed work on the door plug itself. She said that Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun told her on a phone call that he was unable to provide the names of the workers and said Boeing has no records of the work being performed. Boeing spokesperson saying the company does not retain security footage for longer than 30 days. The plane in question was in the factory in September of last year and was delivered in October. So some more news that's raising eyebrows and questions, and oh goodness, oh my. That's all I have to say.
I know.
Oh goodness, oh my.
I'm thinking about I've seen enough datelines and even dramas where you go to look at the camera footage and it's, oh no, it's been, you leave it in and then you use it again and it's new stuff. So the old stuff is gone. So it's plausible.
I can understand that you wouldn't hold it for more than 30 days.
Right. But why do it if you're not going to have it?
What I don't understand is how you don't have any records of who worked on each individual plane. You would think that there's some mark that tells you which team.
But I think this goes.
Or is it a cover up?
I was thinking it was more again of another culture
incompetence
that doesn't track things.
I would agree. Right.
Yeah. That doesn't follow up on things. I mean, that to me is the central tenet component of this, what seems to be an ongoing challenge for this company.
How many crucial bolts are on a Boeing? They're probably thousands. Because these seem really important.
Door plug.
So that something doesn't fly. That seems like those are important. But there must be a million parts that if they're not there, it's a problem. So, I mean, I'm trying to give them some leeway it could happen. But
I'm
then again,
I'm surprised that they wouldn't keep video for more than 30 days. I'm more surprised that you wouldn't have any records of which team worked on which airplane.
Beer and cigarette shares of AB InBev, they're falling. This after the tobacco giant Altria announced it would sell just over 18% of its stake in that brewer for as much as $2.2 billion, as it looks to return more cash to shareholders. Altria owns about 10% of the beer maker. AB InBev also agreed to repurchase $200 million of shares directly from Altria when the offering is completed. Altria's CEO described it as, quote, an opportunistic transaction that realizes a portion of the substantial return on our long-term investment. And, you know, we've always talked like Pepsi. You talk about Pepsi with chips.
Yeah, there you go.
And soda.
Yeah, perfect.
And then you think beer
and
cigarettes.
Beer. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Just 30 years ago, maybe.
Well, maybe what's changing.
40 years.
Meantime, trading platform Robinhood saying it saw a big increase in trading volumes in February, up 36% from January. Overall trading volume neared $81 billion. Volume for options contracts rose 12% to $119 million. And crypto volume was up 10% to $6.5 billion. Shares Robinhood now up more than 100% year over year. And that's what I meant by, we were talking recently about just liquidity in the markets and sort of a feeling, an animal spirits kind of thing that's come back.
Liquidity, yeah, it's happening now, but it's a little bit worrisome.
I mean, I'm not saying not to be worried about it, but I think that's,
right? Yeah.
But that's why I wonder when we look at a Bitcoin.
That Bitcoin gold.
I think it all is sort of a piece.
Of the liquidity, yeah. Of a lot of stuff sloshing around. I was thinking about Herb Kelleher. It wasn't beer. Remember that? It was like bourbon, right? Bourbon in Red Marlboros, I think, or Lucky Strike. That you just don't, does that lifestyle even exist anywhere?
Marlboro Man?
Paris?
Paris exists. And there's a lot of smoking still in Paris. Yeah. There is.
Walking, yes.
There was a lot in Davos when we were there.
Yeah. There is, it's different.
Some news that our audience, I think, is going to be interested in this morning. Former President Trump has now spoken about hedge fund titan John Paulson as, drumroll please, the next Treasury Secretary. That's if he wins the November presidential election. It's according to a new report from Bloomberg out that said that other potential Treasury picks include former U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Susquehanna founder Jeff Yass. We had talked about Jeff Yass when we spoke to the former president because he has a big stake in TikTok. Of course, the former president saying that Jeff Yass had no influence over the president or former president's reversal, if you will, on the TikTok ban or the divestiture proposal. Meantime, Paulson hosted a fundraiser for Trump's reelection at his Palm Beach, Florida home that took place last month, and he's scheduled to hold another one next month. A campaign spokesman telling Bloomberg that there have been no discussions of who would serve in a second Trump administration. Later this morning, we will talk to Steve Mnuchin, who served as Treasury Secretary under President Trump, and maybe we'll talk to him about Mr. Paulson and some others, and maybe even himself about his.
Paulson made a lot of money.
Next steps.
Short in the during the housing crisis, but then he was big on a couple of things that didn't work. I think it was gold. He was really long gold. Nothing happened for a long time. It'd be weird. There's a lot of names in the world.
Yep.
Within 20 years, the second Treasury Secretary named Paulson. That's weird. Plus a guy ran for president named Paulson. Pat Paulson, do you remember?
That I don't remember.
I don't remember that either.
He's a comedian. Oh. He was a very funny comedian, and he ran for president like four times. It was kind of his.
Like you run for president?
Yeah, like I run for president.
Is he a comedian like you're a comedian? I mean, what kind
no,
of
he was funny. He was actually funny. Pat, very deadpan. He was, and then there's Jim Paulson, who I think would make a great Treasury Secretary,
okay,
too.
There we go.
Isn't there a Sarah Paulson? Was in the OJ thing, I think?
The
Paulson.
Actress.
I don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah, not in,
with OJ?
Not in the real OJ. No.
Oh.
She played.
In the movie.
Yeah, but Pat Paulson was funny. And I guess I'm dating myself, which I never try to never do.
I know.
Former CNN anchor Don Lemon announced yesterday that Elon Musk had canceled a show that he planned to host on X, formerly, of course, formerly known as Twitter. Lemon said he was informed of that decision to cancel the deal just hours after he taped an interview with Elon Musk for the premiere of the Don Lemon show that had been planned for March 18th. Lemon said, "We had a good conversation. Clearly, he felt differently." On X, Musk accused Lemon of asking him questions that were written by former CNN president Jeff Zucker. Musk said, instead of it being the real Don Lemon, it was really just Jeff Zucker talking through Don, so lacked authenticity.
I saw some of the.
I saw it.
He was asking him, like, really gotcha about the grand replacement theory or something.
He was asking him free speech questions. Yeah. He was asking about ketamine use, too.
We asked him about some of these similar kinds
of
questions.
He did, and he said he answered you the same way. He goes, "I don't give up." With you, he said it even more stridently. But I think he said, "I don't give a." Did he not?
That was the language. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
And yesterday he didn't quite say that. He said, "I don't care," or something like that. He didn't use the F word.
The conundrum was
that
Don Lemon was effectively, the plan was for him to be on the payroll.
Right, he was interviewing the boss,
which is different than when I was interviewing him. So,
yeah. not a good, you know,
it would be, boss.
It was a very strange, you're sort of, it's an interview you're conducting, but it's also an interview for the job with the guy who's hiring you, sort of.
Well, there was, I don't know if you saw the reports that he hadn't actually signed the contract yet.
Yeah.
So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. But nonetheless, they were promoting, you know, X was in, Linda Yaccarino was out there promoting this as part of their next strategy. They were at CES talking about it. I think they were already selling ads. So they were doing some of that without the contract in place, which is what I'm assuming the Lemon team is now going to say, well, you know, we actually really had at least an implicit contract because you can't sell ads for something
like that. Oh, you mean to get paid out?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I think there's going to be a real question about whether he gets paid. Yeah. No, yeah.
Elon does not have to think about the way things look as much as the rest of us. I think, like a normal corporate type that does this would be like, oh my God, what are people going to think? Now I'm
imagine
not hired.
If you could
now I'm not. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, exactly. And he does. But if you, you know, I'm hiring you and you're asking me these questions, you're finished, pal. I mean, that's basically what happened. But you can't do that in the normal corporate world. But Elon can. I would like to be able to.
Yeah.
Look out, world.
You try to do it without the.
I do, without having any.
Without having
any juice.
Same
yeah, exactly.
Right.
I have no. You know, I have no right to do it. He does. Yeah.
Cheese will be next.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, Steven Mnuchin, from Treasury Secretary to rescuing a struggling New York bank to buying TikTok.
I think the Chinese will be fine selling it so long as there's not a technology transfer along the way.
Plus, the former Trump administration Treasury Secretary on the GOP's presumptive nominee and on the U.S. deficit.
We shouldn't have done the last $1 trillion in hindsight, and there shouldn't have been the continued multi-trillion dollar spending afterwards. The deficit is out of control. The debt is too high.
We'll be right back.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration. Our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
You're listening to Squawk Pod from CNBC. This next interview.
When you came in, I looked at you and I was like, oh, hey, because I was distracted and we feel like we know this gentleman.
It's former Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin. He served under President Trump. And since then, Mnuchin founded Liberty Strategic Capital, which just this month swooped in to rescue New York Community Bank, which is a lender that's been under serious pressure from outstanding real estate loans. The Long Island-based bank lost 7% of its deposits in the weeks leading up to the rescue deal. And in the span of a little over a month, the company changed its CEO twice, weathered two different downgrades from rating agencies, and announced financial losses that kept getting bigger. Now, the NYCB trouble is part of a larger landscape of concerns about bank exposure to maturing real estate loans. But as you'll hear, that's just one of many topics to discuss with former Treasury Secretary Mnuchin today. Another topic? The next vote on the so-called TikTok ban bill, which you can hear all about in yesterday's Squawk Pod episode. For now, let's get back to Joe, Becky, and Andrew, who sat down with Steve Mnuchin.
I think we should start with TikTok, because I think we're all trying to understand what's happening here, whether it should be banned, divested, or otherwise. And if it is divested, who may be a potential buyer?
Well, you know, when I was Treasury Secretary, I chaired CFIUS, and CFIUS approved, and I had President Trump sign an order that TikTok had to be sold. And I continue to believe that. So I think the legislation should pass. And I think it should be sold. I understand the technology. It's a great business. And I'm going to put together a group to buy TikTok.
You're trying to buy TikTok.
I am, because this should be owned by U.S. businesses. There's no way that the Chinese would ever let a U.S. company own something like this in China.
Have you already put a group together?
No, I'm working
You're
on it.
You're exploring a group.
I've spoken to a bunch of people, but
who would be part of your group?
I can't tell that to you now, but
it would be
a combination of investors, so there would be no one investor that controlled this. The issue is all about the technology. This needs to be controlled by U.S.
Let me ask you a very practical question. If you talk to folks inside the world of TikTok themselves, they would suggest that it is almost impossible within a six-month time period to truly divest it to another group that, frankly, isn't a Meta or a Google, if you will. Because the data for the users is in the U.S., but the algorithm and so much of the other operations are outside of the U.S. What do you know about, now that you've studied this business several years ago, and I imagine you continue to, how you would actually operationally do it?
Well, let me first say, I don't think this should be controlled by any of the big U.S. tech companies. I think there could be antitrust issues on that, and this should be something that's independent, so we have a real competitor, and users love it, so it shouldn't be shut down. The technology, I won't go into all the details, but the app needs to be rebuilt in the U.S. It needs to be U.S. technology. I think there's a lot that could be done in 6 months, but I would work closely with the U.S. and with China.
But do you think that the bill would need to get rewritten by the Senate, effectively, to give you more than 6 months? Is it a timing issue that you think would...
I think a lot can be done in 6 months. It may take a little bit longer, but I think the bigger issue is this shouldn't be controlled by the Chinese.
It is
an issue for this to be on everybody's phone.
Why? Explain why. What are the reasons?
There are certain things I can talk about that are obvious, and there's certain things that I can't talk about that I had access to. But let's just say, when you have this app on everybody's phone, it has the ability to collect an awful lot of data.
Can I ask a question about that, though? And this is the thing that I think nobody knows, and you may be one of the few people who does. Do you believe that the data that it is collecting today, both the data that's being collected and potentially certain things that are being pushed to the users, is being influenced and directed by the Chinese government today? Or do you look at this as a prospective national security threat, meaning it has not been put into practice in any meaningful way right now, but the worry is that one day it could? Which is it?
Well, I'm not going to comment on what's today, but I will comment. There's no question that on a forward basis, they have both the ability to influence the data and they have the ability to collect data, which is probably the bigger concern.
But you're not going to comment on today because you can't do that without giving away things that you might know that others wouldn't?
That's true. And also, I think kind of the issue today, again, I think the focus should be it should be sold. It should be controlled by a U.S. business. It's a great company. It would be terrible if it would shut down. Lots of users use
this. What do you think it'll do?
And we need a competitor to Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
To the extent we care, what do you think it will do to the relationship in China? Between the U.S. and China, to the extent that I try to put myself in the shoes of others to just try to think through the implications.
I think
about a Chinese entrepreneur who builds something pretty great. If you don't think the Chinese government has already used it, which is an interesting question, and it could be used as prospectively, what does that say about how we as a country should operate? And we are different than China, hopefully.
There's a CFIUS order that's in effect that to sell this. So it's in effect. Biden put a pause on it. I think there's a general bipartisan agreement that shouldn't be controlled by the Chinese. I think the Chinese will be fine selling it so long as there's not a technology transfer along the way. And that's the art of the possible.
Why do you think President Trump is now saying he signed that CFIUS bill, the CFIUS ruling that
with
he
you
before him? Why do you think he's now saying that he doesn't think TikTok should be sold or shut down?
I think he doesn't want it shut down, because he's concerned about the power that would create for Facebook. I believe he would support a sale. He did support a sale. You know, right. I'll call him up later and ask him. But I think the answer is
have you spoken to him about it?
I have spoken to him, but I haven't spoken to him about this week. But I believe he would support a sale.
What I found interesting about his comments about the Facebook pieces, and I appreciate his perspective on that, meaning he doesn't want one to be more powerful than the other, but I would have thought that the national security risk, if it really is a risk, and that's why I keep asking the question, if that would be a red line, a hard line. It wouldn't matter whether you care about whether Facebook or somebody else was going to get more power or not if you actually believed that this was a true and present national security
threat.
There
have been times you have seen, you know, Jeff Bezos. Or there are times where it almost looks personal sometimes with the former president, and everybody's got their own.
That's a rationalization defense of the president's thinking.
No, it's not. I'm saying you would normally be just write it off to, oh, he's just got it out for Zuckerberg. And that may be true. So
but
just say
isn't,
it.
Isn't it. Well, if he has it out for Zuckerberg, do you find that problematic?
National security takes a back seat to a personal grudge.
I think the bigger issue is getting back to, I do believe it is a national security threat. I wouldn't have taken it to the president when I did with the CFIUS order. And I continue to believe it is today. So hopefully we get to a good outcome that we don't shut it down. Lots of people love this business. It's a great business. And hopefully we can find a solution where China will allow it to be sold without a technology transfer.
What do you think the president, former President Trump, would say that he would rather see it? If the Chinese say we're not going to sell it, how would he come down on this? If he doesn't want it shut down, but would like to see it potentially bought maybe by a group of American investors, where would he come down?
I'm not going to speculate on that. I'll call him later and ask him.
Okay.
But I think the first choice for everybody should be that it's sold. And I think the Chinese will agree to that as long as there's not a transfer of their critical technology, which I don't think we need in the U.S.
Let me ask you a different question. We keep talking about sort of who might join a former President Trump in office if, in fact, he were to win. If you were going to be teaming up with others to invest in this and you just teamed up to buy a big stake in a bank, do you have any expectation, ambition, plan or otherwise? And what are you telling your investors if the president were to call you and say, hey, I'd love to have you back in my administration in some capacity?
Well, I'm telling my investors that I'm focused on my business and I'm very busy. You know,
but how unhappy will they be then
business.
If you're buying up stuff and then you say, actually, I got to go. I'm going to do this other thing.
Again, my plan right now is to stay in the business. I'm focused on things. I'm excited about New York Community Bank and what we did there. I'm now going to try to put together a group to put together TikTok. So I have a lot to do.
We talk about entitlements.
Absolutely.
We just had not going to get into it, but neither candidate. Once we'll even touch the third rail, President Biden or former President Trump. Do you think that President Trump could get elected if he said he was going to what we accused him of saying a couple minutes ago? If he actually did say, I will look at means testing, I will look at ways of reforming Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security so that we can somehow bring it into 20 years from now, so it'll be solvent. I'll make the hard choices we have to do. Have you told him to do that?
I haven't spoken to him about it recently, but let me tell you what I think.
Okay.
And, you know, again, when I was Treasury Secretary, I had a big title. I was the managing trustee of the Social Security Trust Fund, and I had to put out the report. And I believe the current report says that it's going to run out of money in about 10 years. So I think there needs to be a bipartisan commission in Congress. This needs to be led by Congress. And we need to make sure that the current recipients of Social Security are protected. But we also need to look at a scenario that Social Security doesn't go broke, and that's going to be dealing with the future participants. So there has to be a bipartisan solution. I think it's probably not led by either one of the presidents. But there's no reason Congress can't start working on this now. So after the election, this can be dealt with.
So you acknowledge that neither president, and actually we're both president. We rarely get to say that. So neither candidate will say that prior to the election because they can't.
I'm not going to, you know, whether they do or they don't, that's up to them.
But you think that they should, but don't hold our breath.
I think there needs to be a bipartisan commission because
this is going to run out of money. So this is not something that's a theoretical.
How do we get bipartisan when we can't get either side to say it? Does someone have to say it first?
We just got a big group together on TikTok. I mean, passing this in the House overwhelmingly. I hope Schumer brings this up right away because, there are issues.
Well, he's been totally
non-committal. Because I think you probably looked at the business. By the way, I want to go back to TikTok for a second. How much do you think the company is worth? And also, given the fact that one of the things I think we have learned is the company doesn't make money right now, still a money-losing enterprise.
Well, first of all, it wouldn't be a great strategy if I said on TV what I thought the business was worth if I was trying to buy it.
There have been valuations that have been speculated, let's say, $50 billion. Do you think it's over, under? Let's play the game.
It's worth a lot of money, let me just say. I think the number one issue that needs to be solved is the technology transfer. And if we can figure out a way to solve that, which I think we can, then, I think the price is some large amount of money up front and probably a big earn out. Because you're right, the business, my understanding is, does not make money today.
And does that require the rollover of the current investing group into your group? And would they be part of that?
I have spoken to some of the existing investors. I would propose that they would roll over, the U.S. investors. And my guess is they would.
Like Yaz? Your guess is that they would be on board with this and would support it?
So this would be Bill Ford at General Atlantic, perhaps?
Perhaps.
Okay. What about Jeffrey Yass?
I'm not going to go through investor by investor, but I would give the existing investors an option to roll over. I assume that they would want that. And we'd bring in other investors, but no one would own more than 10% of it.
How much competition do you think you're going to have for this asset? We've heard that folks like Bobby Kotick and others might also want to put together a group, or perhaps they're working with you.
Yeah.
Well, let me just say, the issue right now is really, who can figure out a way to solve the concerns of the U.S. and China to transfer this without taking what they believe is critical technology? That's right. Really what needs to be solved.
Part of this, and I wonder whether you will end up being sort of the diplomat in all of this, is convincing the Chinese that this is acceptable to them, too, because there's also the prospect that the Chinese could say, we're just not doing this.
That's what they've said in the past. Previous proposals, they've blocked because they were not happy about the technology transfer. And I would have to convince them and the U.S. government that there was a way to do this.
How important would it be to bring in other tech companies or other companies? The last time that you went about even working with the private sector when you were in the public sector was Walmart. Walmart was going to be involved. Microsoft was going to be involved at one point as well.
Well, I think
and Oracle is clearly involved.
I clearly would approach some tech companies. I wouldn't approach tech companies that have competitive products because I think it's important this is independent, and I wouldn't let any tech company control this. So nobody would have more than 10% control.
How do you compare that opportunity, the TikTok opportunity, with the opportunity at New York Bancorp?
New York Community Bank is a lot easier. It's a lot easier to get done. I was there yesterday. I'm going to see the private bank today. It's a top 20 bank. We put up a lot of capital, which will stabilize the business, brought in Joseph Otting as CEO, and I think there's going to be a great turnaround.
Let me ask you just a very different question to put your Treasury Secretary hat on for a second, which is, how do you think the economy is actually going?
I'm worried about the economy. So we're in a situation where obviously the Fed is on hold. I agree that the Fed needs to see continued data. The last thing we want them to do is lower interest rates and not control inflation. But even if the Fed lowers rates to 3.5%, I think we're going to see 10-year treasuries in the 4 to 4.5% range for a long time.
Andrew, did you read this?
Yeah, no, I did.
$7.99 deodorant. It used to be 4, but it's not. That's an example of where it is. Things seem like they are 40 or 50% higher than they were 3 years ago. As good as the economy seems to people that follow it.
So my question, though, this is where I wanted to ask the former secretary about this. If you had been the secretary of the Treasury for this current administration, is there something you think you could have done and done better that would have changed the outcome in a material way? Meaning, I think there's a lot of economists who look at this and think, actually, things are pretty on a relative basis compared to where they started the ball game and where we are today, they go, actually that's a pretty great outcome. Again, looking relative to the rest of the world and recognizing that the Federal Reserve plays a huge role in all of these things.
Well, let me just say I agree with your comment that even if inflation comes down, prices will stop at much higher levels, which is a real affordability issue. But I mean, I think the simple answer is there was just too much government spending. I mean, I think when you look back in COVID, we needed to do the first two bills or there would have been a worldwide depression. We shouldn't have done the last $1 trillion in hindsight. And there shouldn't have been the continued multi-trillion dollar spending afterwards. The deficit is out of control. The debt is too high. We had a debt pre-COVID that we were beginning to pay down.
But do you think that that attacking those issues would have had an impact on inflation?
Absolutely. The government spending is what caused inflation. It started in COVID, and it continued on with multi-trillion
dollar
gasoline
packages. Is still up 50% higher than whatever. And if your paycheck is still below, in real terms, where it was 3 years ago, and it is, average weekly earnings are still below before
Mr.
Biden
Secretary,
came in.
If you're worried about
the economy,
what are you
going to do? You don't have as much money.
A stagflation situation?
I am. And I think Jamie talked about that scenario. So, I mean, I think we're not out of the woods yet. So we're in a period of high interest rates. I think the economy is going to slow down. And it's something we've got to carefully watch.
Mr. Secretary,
you're still speaking guarded terms like a Treasury Secretary.
Thank
it's amazing.
You.
You can't get rid of it.
You can't break it.
Do you support a strong dollar?
I support a stable U.S. dollar.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you for breaking the news that you're looking at this, and you got to come on back and keep us informed as to what this bid might look like.
Thank you.
See, he's like a real treasurer, like a real politician. Thank you. I don't want to say any more.
Coming up on Squawk Pod, drama at the House of Mouse. We're digging into the proxy fight at Disney with activist campaign expert Ken Squire.
Listen, do I want 6 Nelson Peltzes on the board? No, but I think having 1 Nelson Peltz on the board, especially at a point when there's a succession at a key point in the company's lifetime.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod. Now for a Wall Street drama. Disney, if you haven't heard, is in the midst of a proxy fight with billionaire activist investor Nelson Peltz. Nelson Peltz is a prolific activist investor, meaning he's historically made very public, very aggressive demands to public companies. Like in 2017, he pushed for seats on the Procter & Gamble board in what became one of the most expensive proxy fights in history. In 2022, Peltz's firm Trian Partners launched a proxy fight against Disney, actually, but then called it off when CEO Bob Iger announced a restructuring and 7,000 layoffs and an annual dividend for shareholders. Now this time, Peltz is pushing for changes to the Disney board. He wants a seat, and he also wants one for Disney's former CFO, Jay Rasulo. Also involved is former Marvel CEO with a $2.4 billion stake in Disney. That's Isaac Perlmutter. Peltz is also demanding a leadership restructuring and an overhaul of Disney's streaming business. Now, there are a few unorthodox things about this particular proxy fight. One, high-profile outsiders are now weighing in. JP Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon took Bob Iger's side in the whole thing, endorsing Disney in a statement to our very own David Faber at CNBC. The other unusual bit is Disney's strategy to handle the publicity and the proxy fight. It's been as pugnacious as the activist hedge fund making a fuss. In fact, Disney aired an ad campaign that made the board politics, well, kind of personal. Here's a clip.
Nelson Peltz and Jay Rasulo threatened to jeopardize the incredible progress the company has made since Bob returned as CEO. At this critical moment, we simply cannot let that happen.
Here's Becky.
Joining us right now is the founder of 13D Monitor and 13D Activist Fund, Kenneth Squire. Ken, let's talk a little bit about this, because it's not very often that you see a company that takes the same tactics that the activists tend to use and fights back. A lot of times companies like to pretend they're above the fray.
The companies have their advisors too, and they have their activist defense advisors in there. And when it gets to this point, they take similar tactics.
Although I will say, look, usually what it is whispering to journalists, trying to get them to carry your water and do the dirty work for you. When they came out with this kind of campaign style ad, it even sounds like it's voiced over by the same voiceovers you would see in a Donald Trump or a Joe Biden ad. I mean, that to me was a different level, really raising the stakes.
Well, yeah. Bob Iger's obviously pulling all the stops to win this proxy fight. He's, getting Jamie Dimon to come on the record. I've never seen this before, ever, a CEO of that magnitude coming on the side of another CEO. Not sure he probably spoke to Nelson Peltz first or thoroughly read Nelson's plans before opining, but, so I take that with a grain of salt. But, yeah, they're doing what they can to win this. There's no doubt about
it. I think that's been part of the question, though. What are Nelson Peltz's plans beyond what we've already seen the company do with Bob Iger back?
Well, I think Nelson, the interesting thing is that his plans are not that different than what the company wants to do. He wants to get streaming margins better. He wants to have, growth in the parks. He wants to have a successful CEO succession, number
right,
one
kind
at
of the
box office.
They're already doing.
There's the things they're already doing. I think, but the key thing is that you can't underestimate the value of having an experienced, dedicated shareholder on the board, someone like Nelson Peltz, who's going to debate in the boardroom as opposed to defer. I think when you have a CEO like Bob Iger, who's incredibly impressive, and I think he's a great CEO, but you sometimes, when you're so iconic, you sometimes get a board that's a little obsequious, and it's good to have somebody in that room that's gonna debate and gonna question.
So you think it's a good idea?
I think it's a good idea. I think, listen, do I want six Nelson Peltzes on the board? No, but I think having one Nelson Peltz on the board, especially at a point when there's a succession at a key point in the company's lifetime, and they've already shown that they failed at that once.
What do you think of Nelson Peltz's track record?
I think it's mixed. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
I mean, he did great at Heinz. He did great at Procter & Gamble. His record at Invesco or at Wendy's, as far as the term, is not that great relative to the benchmarks. But I think it's hard to look at that. I mean, there's so much that goes into something like that. I think you look at the situation here, and I think this is a board that really could use a shareholder voice, especially when they're going through succession.
I guess part of the question, look, Bob Iger's a pretty big shareholder, too. A lot of his net worth is wrapped up in this. I guess the question becomes from the company, and I can understand this to some extent, when you have such a bitter fight, the time and attention it takes away from management's attention to be launching attacks like this, to be fighting them off. And then how productive is that relationship going to be once you've kind of had this scorched earth on both sides?
So I think I'll take both of those. First, I think the whole time and attention and distraction, as somebody that's followed activism for so long, it bothers me when Bob Iger is using the word distraction. This is a shareholder of a company that's been underperforming, that's trying to improve corporate governance, and to say that's a distraction, it's kind of poo-pooing everything that shareholder.
Well, yes and no. I mean, look, he came in and Nelson Peltz dropped his proxy attack when Bob Iger came back, said, I'm all in favor of what he's doing. Bob Iger has come in and made a lot of changes that look very similar to what Nelson Peltz is saying he wants done. In the meantime, if you're trying to do that at a key time for the industry, I think, which is a pretty challenging industry, and trying to deal with one of these from the outside, from somebody who's saying, do all the things you're already doing, that's a little different.
Yeah, but Nelson Peltz did back off at first, and he gave the company time to do what they want to do, and the stock kind of receded back down, and that's when he got involved again. If the stock been going up again, I don't think Nelson would be here right now. And as far as him being a distraction on the board, I think if you look at Procter & Gamble, that was one of the most contentious proxy fights we've seen in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
He was not, after he got on the board, everyone was friends, and they left as friends, and the Procter & Gamble CEO has a lot of good things to say about Nelson. So
I think you
see that in activism a lot.
That it's all bluster ahead of time.
Yeah, and once again, they're all professionals. They all, Bob Iger and Nelson Peltz were friendly before this. It'll be fine. It's the whole Ike Perlmutter connection that I think is more what's worrying Bob Iger.
Okay, the Perlmutter connection. What's the concern there, you think?
Well, I think there's no secret that the relationship between Bob Iger and Ike Perlmutter, and there's no secret between the relationship with Nelson Peltz and Ike Perlmutter, and I don't think Bob Iger wants Ike Perlmutter in his boardroom, and he thinks he's kind of getting that a little bit with Nelson Peltz.
Okay,
I don't think he is.
You think Nelson Peltz should get a board seat. Do you think he will?
No, I don't think he will. I think, you know, there's a saying in baseball that every team's going to win 54 games, every team's going to lose 54 games. It's what you do with the other 54 that matter. I think by doing the deal with Value Act, Disney kind of got that middle. They got that other 54 games by putting James Gorman on the board. I think that went a long way with a lot of the people that were on the fence to come to Disney's side. And so I don't think he's going to win this proxy fight, although I think he should.
Okay. Ken, thanks for stopping by today.
No, thanks for having me.
That's the podcast for today. Thank you for listening, as always. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin, weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. You can always catch the highlights and some extra context right here on Squawk Pod. Just remember to give us a follow and, if you can, a review wherever you're listening now. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Next, don't give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Biosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Next, don't give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.